Mr. Prime Minister, Minister Fairhall, distinguished guests. 7 years ago, we put up the first satellite, and one of the first two we put up was a small grapefruit-sized vehicle. We suddenly began to realize we'd put a star in the sky that was going to stay up there 2,000 years. And a few of us were a bit shaken by the fact that we had suddenly added to a star in the sky. Well, we can look back now after 7 years and see what we've done. Let me say that the scientific payoff from the work we're doing seems to take 4 or 5 years before you really see it. And in the last several months, well, I think there's been some interesting results in the United States that gives you appreciation of the scope of what we're doing. Studying the path of these vehicles as they go around the Earth and the imperfections or peculiarities in those paths has given us some knowledge of the inside of the Earth. This is surprising, but we have advanced the theories of what the inside of the Earth is like, of what the stress in the crust of the Earth is. We have come up with calculations that indicate that there is concentrations of high-density mass in various places in the Earth, one of the places, incidentally, being in Southeast Asia. These affect the paths of the vehicles going around the Earth. Of course, you add instruments to these vehicles, and you're suddenly studying the atmosphere in which we live. You're finding out things that we hadn't known about it before, leading you, as I'll mention a little bit later, to better knowledge of the weather. And you study the upper atmosphere. You find out we actually have come up with better knowledge of what constitutes the upper atmosphere, that there's a strata of helium in the upper atmosphere that we had never known before. We realize now that what the upper atmosphere is determined largely by a very tiny part of the radiation that comes from the sun. The ultraviolet radiation is absorbed in the upper atmosphere, and this determines the structure of that area and the temperature of that area. We found a tide in the atmosphere that follows the sun around, a bump on the atmosphere that follows the sun around the Earth. We've studied the ionosphere. Before, our studies of the ionosphere were limited to what we could see from the bottom, and because the signals weren't penetrating the ionosphere, why, we didn't know very much about the upper half of it. So our satellites have carried equipment that study the ionosphere from the top side. As a result of this, we have come up with some new theories about the ionosphere, what it is, why it's there. And it's very possible that from this knowledge, there'll be improvement in long-distance radio communication. As you go on out from this, you study, of course, the moon next. This station and another station, the moon, are particularly important on that. You've seen the pictures we get on the moon, but we want to go farther. We're going to land vehicles on the moon and see what it's made of. Besides green cheese, we all know that. We again, by putting a vehicle in orbit around the moon, not only will take pictures, but very probably we can calculate what's inside the moon, just as we have done with the Earth. And from this, perhaps we can find out how the moon was formed. As you go on out to the planets, we know very little about the planets. They've been a great mystery. We've already sent a vehicle out there. The Early Mariner went out and measured the temperature of the surface of Venus, for instance. We're going out, the vehicle on the way to Mars now, which is halfway there. It will take pictures and send them back by television at a time when Mars is 135 million miles from the Earth. And finally, of course, we've been studying the radiation from the sun. And this affects our lives all the time. It affects the atmosphere and the ionosphere, as I mentioned. And when you get through, you realize we've been living in a greenhouse here, a protected shell. The atmosphere and the elements above us here are sort of a protective shell around us. Only a small part of the radiations of the sun gets through to us. Some of it is changed, some of it is absorbed. So This, then, gives us an idea of what caused the environment we live in, its temperature and the constituents of the atmosphere and so forth. As you see, once we learn how this came about on the Earth, probably we can begin to anticipate what we're going to find on the planets a little better, because they are subjected to some of the same bombardment from the sun, the solar radiation and fluxes. And so perhaps we can anticipate by some scientific theory and calculations what we're going to find when we get to Mars or Venus, or we certainly can extend and interpret the data that we get from those. A small amount of data will be extended and supplemented by the theories that we'll have. Well, and one interesting result, incidentally, very recently, is that we've been anticipating meteorites out in space, but we suddenly seem to have found that the meteorites are all near the Earth. The vehicles leaving here run through a stream of meteorites, and then the number of meteorites decrease. Now, actually, I'm talking from some very early results. I hope that they confirm it now that I've mentioned it. This particular station here, of course, is going to be for the exploration of the moon and the planets, and I don't think in our program there's a more exciting part of the program. This is going to capture everyone's imagination, I'm sure, as the pictures we took of the moon already have, but as soon as we get some pictures of Mars, I'm sure that this is going to be great interest in many articles in the newspaper about it. I'd like to mention very quickly what we call the application satellites. There's the weather satellite that was mentioned earlier. The weather is we really have very small number of measurements around the Earth telling what the weather is going to be, because the Earth is covered such a great extent by water that we get relatively few measurements. So we're hoping that the meteorological satellites, as they're extended, are going to tell us a lot, give us a lot of additional information that allow us to predict the weather. Certainly, the infrared-seeking devices, the temperature-seeking measuring devices that are aboard these meteorological satellites, will tell us the temperature of the Earth and the heat exchange between the sky and the Earth as it goes around and around the Earth. And from this, we will begin to be able to anticipate with computing machines what the weather is going to be. We have established communication satellites, and you might be interested to know that the SINCOM 2 and SINCOM 3, the last two, which are in synchronous orbit, are in 24-hour service handling military communications into Southeast Asia. One of those vehicles, by the way, stands perfectly still in the sky, so still that you can point antennas at it in the evening and then shut them off and come in the next morning and turn them on, and they're still pointed right at it. In other words, the vehicle is absolutely standing still. It isn't moving across the sky whatsoever. You've heard a brief mention of our geodetic satellite work, which means that we're going to have better mapping and better knowledge of the coordinates of the various places on Earth. And finally, recently announced, although we've been working on it for several years, but they've just announced the success of it, is the navigation satellite, which will allow ships at sea to come up with a new method of finding out exactly where they are. They are far more accurate than the traditional old celestial navigation devices. I get asked, and I have some down here in the last day or so, what are the benefits? Well, there's the scientific benefits, which I've been mentioning, and I guess some of these application satellites speak for themselves, the benefits. But you want to know what are you really after on this? What are the benefits? Well, I'm going to mention a few, and then I'm going to come back with a sort of a summary on it, because this is a question that is hard to answer in the United States, too. We've learned how to make things more reliable, how to put effort in that makes them work and work for a long period. Our satellites that were up as little as 2 years ago only had a life of, say, 2 months, possibly 3 months. Now the vehicles seem to have, the ones right after that, are still working. Some have been up 2 or 3 years, and we think that they're going to keep working many years. In fact, we're beginning to worry now about how to shut some of them up. There's an international body that's requesting some attention from us on that problem. Of course, as quickly as we got this reliability improved, all of a sudden the communication satellites, which had been sort of hanging fire, suddenly became practical. And they, the stock of the Communication Satellite Corporation reacted to that in the United States pretty markedly. It jumped tremendously as a result of this increase in reliability, which suddenly made the communication satellites practical. Such a nary as computers has received a big impetus from the space program because of the fact that we're an extensive user. We have to have them for all practically every phase of our work. And this has acted as a primer to the computer industry. They have built better computers, improved their techniques, their manufacturing ability, and so this is a typical area that's been improved. One interesting benefit from the space program, I think, is energy sources. You know that these vehicles that go up generate their electricity from little solar cells that are attached to them. We have improved the batteries that are in them. We've just come up with converting chemical energy to electrical energy directly, a device called fuel cells. And you'll see those, I'll bet, on your stations here in, not the tracking stations, but your ranches in Australia within 10 years, I'm sure. When you look at the small benefits which people keep asking, they're kind of hard to find. We learned how to do better soldering, we learned how to make better transistors, but as you look at the small details, all of a sudden you decide that this isn't where the benefits from the space program really is. It's where an earlier speaker mentioned, the whole technology has been speeded up, and you suddenly sense that everything seems to have been speeded up as a result of the effort going into space. Well, there's another benefit, and that is the international cooperation that's going on, and they are the friends we've made in other countries. There is no equivalent installation. Australia has more dishes and equipment, more facilities, space facilities, than any other country except the United States itself. There's no other country that has the equivalent amount. Well, I think that I want to thank Minister Fairhall for his appreciation and farsightedness that resulted in the operational contracts with which our stations in Australia are going to be operated. These contracts are with the Australian industry. And so far, we're most pleased with the quality of the results. We have already seen it up in Carnarvon, the northwest corner, and here the results are already very evident here at this station. I would like to thank the Prime Minister in the name of the government of the United States. We certainly couldn't carry on the space program with the existing scope or quality without the help of the government of Australia. I sincerely hope that there has been and will be proportional benefits here in Australia from the effort. Now, Mr. Prime Minister, as a small token of our appreciation, I'd like to present you with a model of the facility here. It's 1/100th scale. It doesn't operate, but on the other hand, it's a pretty exact model, very carefully made.
You wouldn't care to throw in a small textbook, would you?
Well, as a matter of fact, yeah, there was some added descriptions there with it, and I took pity on you a little bit and tried to tone them down so that they didn't have some of these fouled wording.
Yeah.
Thank you.